Welcome to another edition of Historical with me, Matt Nelson, and Wayne Bridgman, as always.
Hello, listeners.
Now, it's been a few months since our podcast Frenzy. That was January 2017, where we released an amazing three episodes.
Very impressive, yeah.
We then went incredibly quiet on both Twitter, Instagram, and we didn't release any podcasts.
Busy times.
Life took over, that's all we can say. My job got crazy. We were both hit with a barrage of germs, and finally now we emerge fighting fit in April.
Yes, our apologies on the delay, listeners. Like Matt said, I was work was very busy. It went crazy for both of us. I was incapacitated personally by various nasties and bug. It was the flu season, of course, just come to an end. But luckily, if you've heard our previous episodes on ancient medicine, some very useful stuff in there. Very useful. So for me, by just popping a bit of injecting, if you like, Matt, a bit of mercury down the urethra and popping a leech on each ball, back to normal.
Drain a bit of blood as well, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, my blood pressure's gone through the roof. But I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you're walking with a walking stick now.
The important thing is we're back, listeners.
Yeah.
So sorry about the delay.
Now.
What are we talking about?
On to this latest episode. Today, we'll head back to ancient Egypt and talk about one of Wayne's favourite subjects, queens.
What?
Now, that's not the sort of queens Wayne thinks about when he's all alone.
Victoria.
No, these are not the 6 foot plus clad in pink lycra, but with a 5 o'clock shadow. No, we're talking about the queen of queens herself, Cleopatra the VII.
Queens, yeah. Well, I don't find them attractive, Matt. Queens, just to nail that particular ghost to the coffin. Okay, just, but I'm just
curious about them.
Just find them to be curious creatures. You know, is it a man? Is it a woman? Is it something in between?
It's so hard to tell in this day and age.
It is, yeah.
Known to history simply as Cleopatra, she was the last active pharaoh of the Ptolemaic Egypt. Briefly survived as pharaoh by her son Caesarion. Now, after her reign, Egypt became province of the ever-expanding Roman Empire that was gobbling up provinces like Augustus Gloop did with a 24-hour all-you-can-eat pass at Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
And in case any of you listeners haven't seen either of the Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory films.
Course,
personally, I prefer the original.
The original, I think, is considered the best.
Gene Wilder,
old Gene Wilder, and the singing, of course, the Oompa Loompas.
Oh, it's magical, isn't it?
Oompa Loompa, doopy-doo-boo.
But if you haven't seen that, listeners, just for your benefit, Augustus Gloop, basically just a fat German. So. Anyway, Cleopatra was a member, as Matt said, of the Ptolemaic dynasty. Silent P, Ptolemaic. Now, listeners, the Ptolemy family were not actually Egyptian. Bombshell.
You, what?
Yeah.
But they
please don't write in saying that's incorrect, because it's not. I'm sure you're thinking of saying, Wayne, they are Egyptian. Everyone knows that. They're Egyptian rulers. You must be losing your mind. Well, shut it, because you're wrong. It's a fact. Look it up. They were actually a family of Macedonian Greeks. We'll come on to how they ended up down there in a minute. They ruled Egypt after Alexander the Great's death, at the split of his empire, during the Hellenistic period, of course, Matt. So, Greek, not Egyptian. Shove that in your, what was it they smoke out there, those things?
Oh, shisha pipes.
Shisha pipes. Shove that in your shisha pipe and smoke it.
Well, Wayne is quite right, and very forcefully made. When Alexander the Great died, having conquered a huge slice of the known world, he spectacularly messed up and left no heir to his Macedonian empire.
Sterile.
Now, mainly because, funnily enough, he didn't plan to die at the youthful age of 33.
Yes.
He likely died of poisoning, which was the most natural way to plop your clogs off in those ancient times.
Well, could have been alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, it could have been, actually. Yeah. He liked a bit of the old sauce.
Like Bacardi.
He did like the sauce. And secondly, he had gone quite mad with power.
Easily done in those days.
He had of late started to make up some pretty bizarre laws and had begun to show signs of maniacal power.
No.
Now, let's go back and see for ourselves just what a sort of man Alexander the Great ended up becoming. Mistopheles!
Yes, sir. Hello.
Mistopheles.
I have a new rule to put into place, my dear Mistopheles.
So many new rules, Your Greatness. Only last week, you instructed that every member of the Imperial Court should address you as chief of all the magical creatures.
Yes,
but all the magical creatures that live under the mysterious mountain range in North Macedonia. Now, admittedly, you drunk quite a lot of wine at that stage, Sire, so I didn't pursue the bill. Bit of liberty there, hope you don't mind.
Maybe.
What's this new rule, my greatness?
I want every natural Macedonian child born to be called Alexander!
Surprising.
Be it girl or boy, my name must ring on the lips of every woman, child, man, and eunuch.
Well, I know you've been on the lips of many a man and woman, sire, but eunuchs are new one of me. I didn't know that. Anyway, do you really think that's a good idea, sire? I mean, perhaps we should talk about the grain shortage in West Babylon. Just
silence! Not only that, I want every man in my army to be called Alexander Jr. and every woman for that matter to be called, refer to me as Alexander, the greatest great of all the greats before me, and that's two more greats than that cursed Darius the Great.
Catchy, yes. Yes, I know how you feel about him, sire, but really do you think that's necessary? Is this a wise decision? Just thinking about the history books here.
Well, what is it? You don't think they will agree to this, Mistopheles? You forget, Mistopheles, at the age of 33, I have conquered most of the known world.
Yes.
Who but a god could have done this? A god!
Yes, well, that's a very good point, but may I just point out your greatness that you and I have been friends for many years, and I've always told you the truth, have I not?
Yes, that is true.
So I hope you don't think it above me if I say, Your Greatness, you may have gone just a little bit mad with power here.
Ah, yes, Mistopheles. You are most likely right.
Sorry to say.
It is madness to come up with such stupid rules. I'm as mad with power as they come, I'm afraid. I do think I'm as mad as they come.
Well, I must say, Your Greatness, this is good news that you're able to see this. Do you agree this new rule's a bad idea, therefore?
Oh, on the contrary. Oh, wibble, 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 tawango!
Wibble, wibble, okay. I'll inform the generals. So, we don't really know what Alexander was like, but if you'd conquered the world, the whole known world yourself by the age of 33... or whatever age you are now, if you're younger, what effect would that have on your mental state? Especially if you had a bit of alcohol.
Yes. Yeah. All the power of the world. See how that's corrupted Nero and people like that in the past. Well, and he was not even fit to wipe Alexander's boots.
That's right, yeah. So these power issues, then, are best summed up when on his deathbed, I think, Matt, when he said, I leave my empire to the strongest. Okay, a little bit of room for interpretation there for the people that are left behind who are probably power hungry themselves. That was said to his generals as they all surrounded his bed, of course. Now, not exactly a helpful or potentially peaceful transition of power being set up here with such words. You could imagine Alexander laying there on the bed, the generals sort of eyeing each other sideways across the bed, working out who they're going to align to. Who do they see as the threat? Alexander the Great's generals all wanted to rule, and as a result, of course, as you might expect, fought a vicious it was, civil war over about 30 years or so to determine the eventual successor. In fact, Alexander the Great's mother, Olympia, good name, even joined in. Why not? Get in there. And for a while, looked like beating off all the generals with both
her hands.
Both hands.
No, with both her armies, obviously.
Both her armies. Yeah. two vast armies she had. Yeah.
Now, if you want a fantastic podcast on the Civil War of Macedonia, check out Dan Carlin's podcast, A Macedonian Soap Opera.
Very good, yes.
Now, the war is so vicious, and constantly moving between each general as to whom will take control and power. As soon as one general is looking likely to win, the others team up to take him or her down. This civil war had some great characters, such as the powerful Antigonus One-Eye. Really interesting different personalities, and as I said, check out the podcast by Dan Carlin if you want to know more about it. But after 30 years, the war ends with no clear victor, but the surviving generals agree to split Alexander's empire between them.
Reached stalemate, I guess, haven't they?
Yeah. Now, important to this story is that the general that takes possibly the richest prize, the part of the empire that includes ruling Egypt and the surrounding areas, is an incredibly talented general named Ptolemy.
Ah, come full circle.
Now, he was Alexander's most loyal of generals and an impressive man by all accounts. In fact, Ptolemy is believed to have studied with Alexander as a child with Aristotle. So he comes from great, you know, great heritage, this guy's.
Home teaching can work.
Also, Ptolemy actually stole the corpse of Alexander the Great during the Civil War, and it was used as some sort of macabre symbol of the right to rule the empire. He never gave the corpse back, and for hundreds of years it was kept in Egypt.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Well, they do love a corpse in Egypt, of course.
Like a little bit of mummification, of course.
Yes. Well, with his claiming of the Egyptian empire, the Ptolemy dynasty was therefore created. And Egypt was then ruled by that Ptolemaic dynasty, which started with, can you guess, Matt?
Ptolemy the First, I'm going to guess.
Ptolemy the First, at the beginning.
The skilled, seasoned general Ptolemy the First.
That's right, and his ascension to power was in 323 BC and ended with the death of Cleopatra the Eighth. Was it Eighth or Seventh?
Seventh.
Seventh, Cleopatra the Seventh, whom this podcast chiefly is about, of course, and the eventual Roman conquest of Egypt in 30 BCE. Not a bad reign, really, is it? Almost 300 years, good going for a dynasty.
Yeah. Well, with Cleopatra ending the dynasty, or, of course, dynasty, of course, American dynasty, dynasty.
It's my American wife, that's a problem. It's confusing my pronunciation.
It might appear to the untrained eye that she was actually a terrible ruler. But nothing could be further from the truth. The Roman Empire was at the time of Cleopatra's rule, looking into Egypt with the same lustful gaze as a young Bill Clinton did when new White House interns were being selected. Oh yes, the blue dress in this case was Egypt's natural wealth, and the cigar holder was the Roman army. Anyway, we digress from this example.
Yes, well, moving swiftly on, few rulers, kingdoms, could have survived Roman advances at that time. They were incredibly strong, of course. If you were the blue dress, you would have been completely covered in the Roman advance, so to speak. But anyway, back to the Ptolemies.
Allegedly.
Back to the Ptolemies.
Yeah.
Now, the Ptolemies were, during their rule, very keen to keep their bloodline intact.
Now, don't mix up the old your pure blood.
Yeah. That's what dynasty's for, isn't it? They want to keep their bloodlines intact. They didn't want any other family to breed into the Ptolemy's family tree and then get a claim to the power for themselves. Going to confuse things. So they did what a lot of Egyptian royals had done in the centuries before and practiced the old big-eared boys, the intermarrying or interbreeding.
Or, as we would know it, good old incest.
That's it.
But as we know, centuries of interbreeding destroys the old brain cells and leads to web-fingered simpletons, alas, which is not good for a long dynasty of 300 years.
Yeah. Just sorry to our listeners in Devon and Somerset, but you can see a lot of them there.
And, of course, Norfolk.
Yeah. Yes. One of the worst, actually. So, yeah, that is true, though. That does happen, Matt. It's true what you said there, because IQ over time does lower, and you get all sorts of hereditary illnesses if you interbreed and don't spread out into the wider gene pool.
It's always a bit bad here. So this is important to understand because, with that understanding in mind, you know, we know that Cleopatra was a Greek, but a pure Greek. There was no Egyptian blood in her line at all. She was a pharaoh of Egypt, but she was a Macedonian Greek through and through, and explains why Cleopatra doesn't look Egyptian in any of the pictures or portraits that have come down of her over the years. Now, most of the customs the Ptolemy adopted were also Greek, though the good old incest was a diversion from the Greek path, so to speak.
In more ways than one.
Now, understanding the Ptolemy dynasty is not important for this podcast, but it's worth mentioning a few important details. Largely, the longer the dynasty went on, the worse, the more debauched the ruling of the dynasty became.
It became complacent, I guess, didn't they?
Yeah, it was mismanaged, and they mismanaged the huge wealth of Egypt. And those born in wealth rarely appreciate it and abuse the power that kicks in. So,
that's right, yes.
Yes.
Basically, those rulers that come later on are sort of spoilt brats.
Now, there is a saying, as your empire ascends into greatness, you ascend in hard leather shoes. As your dynasty declines, you descend in silk slippers.
Yeah, basically grow soft.
Yeah.
Yes, meaning basically you lose your toughness and let you get the empire in the first place. Like, for example, the Mongols didn't let their warriors live in the city for too long, did they?
They kept them out to keep the toughness there. Yeah. So you win the empire by being tough and hard. But over a certain time, you get weaker and weaker and weaker. You get soft, you take the material possessions, and that then makes you vulnerable to someone like yourself that you were when you were tough.
Yes, comes in and takes that's right. Over. So that's what happened in the case of this dynasty. They became a bit posh and soft-skinned. Most of the rulers had... it seems if you were a guy, you'd be called Ptolemy. If you're a woman... you'd either be called Arisoni, Bernice, said about that, sounds a bit like Bernie, or Cleopatra. So to my maths, Matt, there are obviously seven Cleopatras, because we got to Cleopatra the seventh, didn't we?
Yes, that's correct.
On the Ptolemy reign through a dynasty.
Yeah. Yeah. So it can be very confusing as you get into sentences like, Ptolemy plotted with Cleopatra to kill Ptolemy and his sisters, Berenice and Cleopatra.
Eh?
Yeah, which of course sounds like total rubbish, doesn't it? But it's not. So,
isn't it?
towards the end, these sort of things happen. So towards the end of the Ptolemy reign, Rome was on the rise. They watched from afar as Rome, over a century of fighting with Carthage, had destroyed
her
and removed Carthage's cities to the last stone brick.
Yeah, salted the earth, didn't they?
Yeah, and Rome had an understanding with the Ptolemies, though, that as long as they played bull with Rome, they would not invade and take over.
Sounds fair, but I wouldn't trust those guys on that one. Mm. Playing ball meant paying Rome and other upkeeps for keeping them sweet. Might be troops and so on. However, Rome had no respect for the Ptolemies. They were soft, remember? Which can be best exemplified when a Ptolemy pharaoh went to meet with the ambassador to Egypt, the Roman ambassador to Egypt once, to ask for a favour. The ambassador was Cato, big name of course, a hugely respected Roman, who was later to fight Caesar in the forthcoming civil war. Cato invited the king to come to his lodgings and made the king meet him as he sat on the toilet, squeezing out a little number two, Matt.
A number two to our global listeners, of course, is passing a stool.
Yes, I think stool is the internationally recognised phrase for a dump.
A dump, or so, having a crap.
Yes, I don't want to get too bogged down in that. But
Quite literally.
the poor man had to describe his situation, his plea, to Cato whilst he was sitting there relieving himself. That's probably a conscious effort by Cato to show him the smallest amount of respect possible.
Yes. Now we move forward through the Ptolemy dynasty to 81 BCE. And Ptolemy X has just died. But prior to this, he has caused the general population to go what can only be described as spastic.
Yeah.
When, to drum up a bit of cash, he's just melted the very gold coffin of the founder of the original empire, Alexander the Great.
It hasn't.
So they're in desperate needs for him to do this. This went down, as they say, like a turd in a sandwich. And Ptolemy tried to justify it by saying that the emperor was running low on cash and he needed the cash to feed the populations. Mm. But you can't polish a turd.
You can't put lipstick on a pig. Well, you can, but it doesn't help.
It doesn't help. You're still a pig at the end of the day. Yeah. And this caused major rumpus. But it shows the Ptolemaic Empire was floundering and it was, you know, it was willing to essentially get away with its very emblem of its foundation.
Wow,
just to feed its population.
Desperate times. A series of bloody family feuds had robbed the empire of any legitimate male heirs. And, of course, in the ancient world, that's never a good thing. As if you haven't got a male heir lined up, it can lead to all sorts of unpleasantness, civil war, rebellions, and other families trying to get in on the action, get ideas above their station. So it's worth mentioning that the typical way you died in the Ptolemy family was assassination.
Natural causes. Ways. Yeah.
However, Ptolemy X, his beloved and very, very popular with the masses daughter, Bernice III, had become queen. And following the sort of incest web finger inducing family tradition, she then, of course, married her half brother, who becomes Ptolemy XI. But just 19 days after the ceremony, she's found dead, of natural causes, murdered. And soon the villain is revealed as Ptolemy XI. Couldn't have guessed that one. And he then, of course, does what you might expect and claims the throne for himself.
Now, the citizens of Alexandria are furious, as this was their queen. They were behind Berenice. In their opinion, this Ptolemy XI, well, he was just a little maggot of a man. Literally. And they were going to get their revenge on him one way or the other. So they went on the rampage through the city. And before you can say, maybe my attempt to seize power was too obvious and maybe I should have used a little guile to disguise my true intentions, Ptolemy XI was captured, lynched and left hanging from a tree.
Justice.
Egypt was out of control. And the Roman Empire was breathing down its neck, just waiting to show any weakness where a governor could claim that Egypt needed to be absorbed for its own good and for that of the Roman Empire into the ever burgeoning ranks.
The welcoming
of
bosom of the Roman Empire. Yes, probably would have been for its own good, ranks, though, wouldn't it?
Yes. Now, it's worth stating the importance of a pharaoh to the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. The pharaoh was God on earth.
Right, literally for them. Yeah.
The pharaoh was vital to prevent mass unrest in the capital and the provinces. Having no pharaoh was the worst place to be in, okay? We've made that point pretty heavily. You could elect a turnip and dress it up as a pharaoh, pop it on the throne, and that would be better than having no pharaoh at all.
Would onions work?
An onion would also work, Wayne. Yes, it would. Okay, even a cabbage. Yeah. Actually, some of our politicians are cabbages. So.
Cucumber? Was that sending the wrong message?
Yeah.
Okay, so the throne was offered to the illegitimate sons of Ptolemy XI, who became, yes, that's right, Ptolemy XII.
Told you this was going to get confusing, listeners.
Yeah, they stepped forward to take on the gig, basically, these guys. This guy was sort of fond of chasing tail.
Now, what we mean by chasing tail is he's very fond of the fairer sex, the women. He can't keep his pharaoh's rod of Shah in his breeches.
Yes, his staff of justice.
His staff of justice.
Should have been kept firmly in his toga.
Yeah.
So he was fond of chasing this tail, unfortunately, more than he was in actually ruling. But he was better than no ruler at all, of course.
Hence the turnip comment earlier.
Yeah, might as well. He soon got a subtle nickname, though, from the people. He simply became known as, not that imaginative, but it summed him up well, I thought, simply became known as the Bastard. however, there are worse things, I suppose. However, between his sort of nobbing around and partying, he managed to have 5 legitimate children somehow. The oldest was yet another Berenice, and the second oldest was, why not throw that in there again, Cleopatra VII. And yes, this is the Cleopatra that would become so great that we know her name, even though she lived over 2,000 years ago.
So let's explore her, shall we?
Okay. Not going to the obvious joke there, actually.
No, absolutely. So we're just
exploring her for knowledge, presumably.
Let's explore her personality and the history of this young lady. This young princess was clever and quick-witted and with an insatiable thirst for...
Not going there.
Knowledge.
Again, knowledge.
Knowledge. She excelled in her studies and her esteemed scholars were amazed at her aptitude for languages. Mm. Quick quiz question. How many languages did Cleopatra speak?
Okay, what are my options?
Okay, there are 3, 9, or 12.
Okay, seems like a lot, anything over 3, but seeing as it's there, I'm going to say 9.
Yes, you're right, 9 languages. She could speak Hebrew, Arabic, Syrian, she'd speak with the Medes, she could speak with the Parthians, to name but a few.
And according to Julius Caesar, perhaps a 10th language, the language of love.
Oh, very good. Or potentially the 11th, the language of diplomacy.
Oh, okay. Well, very intelligent lady we're dealing with here. Yeah, and those
not,
languages.
Not any issues with the gene pool with her. She not was a cut above the rest.
Yeah. So, having 11 languages, that means, of course, very useful when you're meeting dignitaries from all these various nations hanging around the court. And as a young woman, she surrounded herself with the most gifted people in Alexandria. She was a very formidable lady, which is why her father enjoyed a co-rule, actually, with himself. He could see the value. It's worth noting the Ptolemy dynasty did value the leadership of women, as they did in Greece, and had many queens during the dynasty. This was in contrast to Rome, and who would never value a woman as highly, of course. Though Rome had inspirational women in their history, they were never actually given that power. A powerful queen in Egypt was to cause friction with some of the old fuddy-duddies in Rome, basically the Republican Party.
Yeah, absolutely. Pharaoh Ptolemy the 12th was in a troubled position, though. A troublesome position, though. His father had promised Egypt to Rome upon his death, but the Senate at Rome had not acted on this as they were otherwise engaged in wars, primarily with Mithridates, the Poison King, a war that lasted 25 years. Mm. Eventually brought to the end by a cheeky little chap called Pompey the Great. Either basing broad in this war or recovering from past civil wars and then lost in intrigue leading up to new future civil wars.
A time of great turmoil.
It was a time of unrest. Ptolemy was smart enough, cookie though, to keep Rome happy, and he made sure he sent ambassadors to Rome and made sure that he financed key people who he thought held influence in Rome. One particular chap was none other than a young chap called Julius Caesar, who was on the rise in Rome as a budding senator. This meant the Romans were supportive of the Ptolemies as long as they kept Rome happy with grain and gold. But the taxpayers in Egypt despised him for, you know, Egypt was in a bad way still, yet he was sending gold and grain to Rome, yet they couldn't get the geopolitical impact of not keeping Rome happy. So, you know, multiple riots occurred and Ptolemy slowly lost his control of the city to such a degree that in 58 BCE, he was forced into exile and he took his talented young daughters, Cleopatra and Arisome, with him.
Yes, he could see their value. However, he left his eldest behind. She seemed reluctant to leave, to start with, and it soon became apparent why. Berenice called herself queen, and was backed up by the rebels who had ousted her father so clearly. Her faction of family had helped stir up the people in the first place, you see. He was gone for about 3 years before returning with Roman troops at his side, courtesy of another statesman he had kept fed and watered in the good old days. It was the first time Roman legions had ever entered Alexandria, that's a city, and they were invited by the exiled Ptolemy the 12th. Be careful who you let into your home, listeners, who you invite in. They might not want to leave when you want to chuck them out, be it a mother-in-law or Roman legion.
When he arrived in Alexandria, he found his oldest daughter, Berenice, on the throne, as we said, ruling without him and apparently rather keen to keep her role.
He would be, yeah.
So how would you handle this this situation? Father and daughter discussion, you know, tell her just to wait a few more years so she can regain power rightfully. Mm-hmm. Congratulate her on her tenacity and skill with a fatherly tear in your eye, maybe.
Offer more pocket money.
Yeah, more pocket money. This is the ancient world now, listeners. Think Game of Thrones. Okay, and you won't go far wrong by knowing that she was immediately executed. The details of her execution are not known, but it was pretty quick and pretty barbaric.
Probably for the best.
Now, so Ptolemy took back the throne and ruled Egypt until 51 BCE, when he kicked the royal bucket, he died, leaving his protege, the now oldest surviving daughter, Cleopatra, holding on to the rod of power. The country was in debt, and all those debts fell to his successor. So his surviving now 18-year-old daughter took control of Egypt, and that was quite a lot, of turmoil and situations that she needed to resolve.
And luckily for Egypt, Cleopatra was not a naive 18-year-old at this stage. She'd been consort and well-groomed by her father, not like that, Matt, although incest was rife, since he regained power, and had gathered a lot of intelligence, a very strong network of courtiers she had at her side, and was to prove a very capable queen. Now, we emphasise queen, Matt, not a pharaoh or pharaohess. To be a pharaoh, she needed to marry and serve in joint power with a legitimate male co-ruler. That sort of glass ceiling was indeed in place for women even in that era, Matt, as she had, even if she had more power than Roman women, that was still there.
Still had that limitation.
Yeah, but she wanted to bust through that glass ceiling. She wanted true godly power. So how does a woman get true godly power? Well, she needed a husband, basically.
She's a sad state of affairs, unfortunately. Yeah. But in this case, the only option available to her, as it was incest all the way in those days, was her 10-year-old brother. I can see us all going, that's a bit wrong. Go and phone up Operation Yew Tree. But they didn't exist. This was BCE, and this is what happened, unfortunately.
Most politicians, of course, would be fine with that 10-year-old brother, you know, but
Moving on. Can you imagine how this incredibly gifted lady felt as she had to marry her 10-year-old brother, Ptolemy the 13th? Aware, though, within 8 years, when he was 18 himself, he would be of an age to be pushing for more power himself and looking to sideline his sister. Yeah. So she knew she had power, but probably not for a huge amount of time. Now, probably partly she was happy as she knew she could play this little lad around her finger and essentially rule on her own for that period of time. But it also was an insult to her skill set and capabilities to have sharing power with essentially what was, you know, a little brat.
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah. So in hindsight, perhaps she should have managed her marriage with Ptolemy better than she did. But hey, she was 18 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't make
Give her
every...
a break, for goodness sake. Yeah. She did pretty well.
18-year-old in charge of, you know, a huge empire. So you can't make every decision the right one at that age, as we all know. But she basically treated him like crap. And rather than sort of grooming him and taking him under a wing into her inner circle...
That's what they call it, eh?
That's what they call it. to do her bidding. She kept him in the dark, basically, and ignored him. But what she mistakenly did was to push him more, by doing that, into the influence of her politically active and dangerous enemies in court.
Yeah.
Who were sort of always plotting this way and that way, seeing how they
get
the
court was, wasn't it? It was a very, very sort of political court.
Yes, a fluid beast. Mm-hmm. A many-headed hydra. However, through a good tax programme and focusing on getting Egypt back into the black, she had a very successful time and can be considered generally a very successful ruler for that period.
For that period, yeah. Now, the Ptolemies spoke Greek throughout their dynasty and refused to speak Egyptian, which is the reason that Greek, as well as Egyptian languages, were used on official court communications and were found on such items such as the Rosetta Stone. Mm-hmm. What is the Rosetta Stone, though? I used to think Rosetta Stone was a sort of... Caribbean lady that spoke a lot of languages, Rosetta Stone, because she was it. But it wasn't. It was discovered in Egypt.
You jerk.
By the Napoleonic French. And it was commissioned by Ptolemy V. This was a proclamation that Ptolemy V, as a ruler of the land, was just basically a braggathon about how great he was.
Yeah, I like that sort of thing.
But this large black stone had three sides of writing on it. One in Greek, one in an ancient language called Demotic, and one in Egyptian hieroglyphs. When it was discovered in 1799, we had no idea how to read hieroglyphics. But because we could understand Greek and Demotic, we knew it was the same message in different languages, so we could learn hieroglyphics as a consequence, because we knew what the hieroglyphics said, because we knew Greek and Demotic. And so we'd actually learned a forgotten language.
Yeah, it's a real amazing find, all those hieroglyphs that are out there that couldn't be read before. You can find the stone in the British Museum, actually, along with most of the other items that have been plundered from around the world.
Yeah.
But just looking after it, keeping it nice and clean and safe. By contrast, to all the other Ptolemies, Cleopatra did learn to speak Egyptian, though, and represented herself as the reincarnation of the Egyptian goddess Isis. Nice one. The locals went wild for this. They loved a bit of god action, of course, the Egyptians. And Cleopatra 18 and onwards was hugely popular with the locals. Hugely popular. A bit like British politicians trying to sing a pop song at a political conference. AK, you're probably too young to, or in a different country, so you can't remember this, listeners, but probably worth Googling. If you look back to when Labour, all those politicians lined up singing "Things Can Only Get Better" by Dee Ream. That's sort of what we're seeing here.
Yeah, she was trying to do a bit of cloud pleasing.
Maybe that's a bad example.
Bit of a cringe. The scheming of courtiers with her young brother, though, began to gather, despite her popularity and the fact she had been successful, it had begun to start gathering momentum. And in 48 BCE, she was thrown out of power and of Alexandria during a coup as her husband took the reins of power and tried to kill her off.
As predicted.
News reached her that it was a coup was just about to start, and before she could find herself on the end of a long shaft, she escaped Alexandria with her sister Arisone, and they headed to Syria to hide away and plot their comeback. But Cleopatra, as you can imagine, is furious, and her desire and ambition to return to retake power is like a kettle boiling over or a fuse about to explode a bomb.
Yes, but she still has loyal supporters, many of them, and starts to build up an army that one day might help her retake power. You need an army in those days. But there she must wait for the dice or cards are stacked against her at present. She can essentially wage a war, but at a low scale, and she does not have the weight of numbers or technological advantage, and money in fact, to beat the might of her brothers.
She must wait, like my cat does over his food timer, as it ticks away, tick-tock, tick-tock, for the lid to ping open so he can feast on his little heart's content. Yes, she must wait, perhaps for a time when the dice are then loaded in her favour. And she can get revenge. Beware a woman scorned, beware a queen dethroned. So begins the civil war between the two Ptolemies. So, years pass and we leave Cleopatra in exile in Syria, battling it out with her brother, and turn our gaze to the eternal city of Rome.
Rome has been embroiled in a civil war, which after years of bloody fighting...
and a weakening of Rome's military and finances as well.
Yeah, it's finally in its closing stages now. This war is being fought between the irresistible politician, infamous swordsman... all-round great guy, magnificent general, Gaius Julius Caesar, his words, and the full power of the Republican Senate, led in battle by an equally incredible figure, to be fair, and hugely successful general, Pompey the Great.
Now, we should explain that these individuals that call themselves the Great were not just big heads with an inferiority complex. No, the title of the Great stems back into the Persian Empire. Cyrus, who formed the empire, was called the Great. He was then followed by Darius the Great. All the leaders were called the Great. So when Alexander took the empire, he became the Great. So Pompey also had followed this course and spent a lot of time ruling in Egypt and called himself the Great.
Yes, and if I was going to be a ruler in those times, I'd probably call myself, you know, Wayne the Great, because calling yourself Wayne the average ruler wouldn't have quite the impact on your enemies that you'd want it to have, would it?
So
that said, Pompey was not short of a bit of self-publicity himself, and self-loving, in fact. Dan Carlin, we mentioned earlier, called him a praise junkie, which we think fits him very well indeed. So we suspect he took the honour of the title easier than most did.
Now, multiple battles had been fought between Caesar and Pompey, but at the Battle of Pharsalus, on the 9th of August, 48 BCE, Pompey is finally beaten. In a bizarre turn of fate, both Pompey and Caesar, before the war, though, had broken out, had been very close. In fact, Pompey married Caesar's sister to cement their alliance.
Good buddies, yeah.
Also, when she died, both men were heartbroken and, through grief, got close.
Not in a You know, not in that sort of way, just
in a manner.
Very, very close, genuine friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important later to realise that both Pompey and Caesar fought bitterly in the Civil War. They both liked and hugely respected each other. It's worth noting also that the time Caesar was in Gaul fighting and beating them to his and Rome's bidding, which took some 10 years of constant campaigning, Pompey, with Crassus, had looked after Caesar's interests and affairs in Rome.
Yeah, so Pompey did have Caesar's back again.
Not in that way.
Not again. And was in a sort of a secret pact/agreement with him and the hugely notable chap called Crassus.
Now, we've covered Crassus, listeners, briefly in the Ancient Special Forces episode 3, I believe. Crassus once, said you were not rich enough unless you could buy your own army.
Yeah.
Famous phrase. He was pretty rich.
Yeah, so they essentially controlled the power in its entirety in the Roman Republic. This was a secret pact called the Triumvirate, and it was followed by a second Triumvirate, a three-way pact. Although during the second one, Crassus was actually killed.
As we highlighted in the Ancient Special Forces against the old Parthian horse archers.
Disciplined
and skilled special forces altogether. Nasty buggers.
Yeah, you only really had respect and a path to power in ancient Rome if you were a great general. And in his bid to become that, killed by the Parthians.
Yeah.
Nasty buggers. Though Caesar and Pompey now found themselves at opposite ends of the battlefield in the Civil War. And they had a huge history. So the message to take from this is that Caesar and Pompey are actually a lot closer and have a lot in common with each other than is sort of generally casually thought, we think. Both could be considered in the top 20, actually, for greatest Romans in the history of the Republic. And yeah. Both good friends.
Yeah. Alas, both could also be considered for the various schemings that they were involved in as good reason that the Republic finally ended in the first place.
Mm.
But that is another story, and we're not going to go into it today. But we just needed to set the scene. Now, Pompey had been Rome's most successful general, as we said, prior to Caesar, and had a very close connection to Egypt. So in the aftermath of the Battle of Pharsalus, Pompey, thinking Egypt might be a safe haven for himself and a good place to lay low after his defeat to Caesar, decided to escape the pursuing army that wished for his capture and surrender. And in Egypt, he could then plan his next move, or his comeback. He had, after all, a few aces up his sleeve still. He'd had the capitulation of his army in this battle, but there were still other large, formidable Republic armies in the field that he could, in time, command. In Pompey's view, Caesar had won the battle, but not the war.
Yeah. So Pompey, his wife, and a number of close, loyal men made a mad dash in disguise, popping a cloak, across land and to a small harbour where they chartered a ship and then they set sail for the great city of Alexandria. This action was to be the catalyst, actually, for many events that were to follow him. If Pompey had chosen another destination, perhaps this story would end here and history would take a very different turn. Cleopatra would have been a forgotten name. But Julius Caesar, he was sharp as a razor wire, this guy, and he'd worked out that the most logical location for Pompey was to flee to Egypt. He could bide his time easily there, hide away. So he left his trusted second-in-command, Mark Antony, in command of his armies, and set off to pursue Pompey with a legion of his battle-hardened veterans, tough buggers for Alexandria.
Now, Caesar had two reasons to pick Alexandria. Firstly, to chase down Pompey. And the second, well, he had heard stories coming from Alexandria that two siblings of the ruling Ptolemy family had been engaged in a civil war. It's acceptable to push that Romans can have a civil war, but not one of their client kingdoms. Really, that's not acceptable at all. So Egypt is in crisis, and Egypt supplies Rome with her grain and pays considerable tributes in gold that had suddenly stopped. Now, without her grain, Rome starves and people think of rebellion, and rebellion can't be allowed to happen. Rome had seen enough bloodshed in its time. The grain needed to sail to Rome, and so this meant that Caesar had to stop the war between the two blasted Ptolemies. So, off Caesar and Pompey sail, and the future of Roman Egypt will hang on the outcome.
So, there we go. In the next episode, we'll leave it there. In the next episode, Pompey will arrive in Egypt and will be greeted by the brother of Cleopatra, with Caesar hot on his tail. War will be fought, but between whom, Matt? A certain young queen will get rolled up in a fancy carpet and be presented to a predatory male. Julius Caesar.
All this and more in the next episode of Cleopatra.
So, bye for now, listeners.
Egyptian.